Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
All right, welcome to Money and Me. And today's topic, we will be discussing all about Singapore's treasury bills and Singapore's savings bonds, as well as fixed deposits. I mean, they've all created a buzz with retail investors when yields hit record highs back in 2022, as well as 2023. And so far, the amount of interest you can expect to yield from these government securities have been relatively attractive. I mean, in the latest SSB tranche, the Monetary Authority of Singapore announced that it has a total average return per year of about 3.04%, with a first year interest rate of about 2.95%. Just yesterday as well, the MAS announced that a cut-off yield for the latest Singapore 6-month treasury bill had rose slightly to 3.8%. But here's a question to think about. Given how inflation has played a significant role in an increase of these government securities, are they still worth investing in when inflation's tamed? And with interest rates widely expected to be cut sometime this year, what kind of impact is it likely to have for us here in Singapore? And how can we prepare ourselves for it? We're going to find out the answers to these questions with Elijah Lee, the Senior Financial Services Manager at Phillips Securities. Good morning, Elijah. How are you doing so far?
Good morning. I'm good.
All right, fantastic. Looking forward to the chat today. Now, first thing on our agenda, the rate of returns on government bonds. We're talking all about SSBs and T-bills. And,
yes,
you know, like I've mentioned, right, returns have been quite attractive of late. In the February tranche, we had 2.81%. In March, we had 2.88%. And in April, we're going up to 3.04%. So can we talk a little bit about the investors' interest in these government securities these days? And what's the appetite like for them so far?
Okay, so it's actually quite interesting when it comes to the Singapore saving bonds. If you look at the allotment data going back to the start of 2023, actually demand has slightly weakened for SSBs.
Oh.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. Sorry, you say, oh, so I know you're surprised.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, if we count the past 16 SSB issues, right, actually only 5 of them were ever oversubscribed. Only 5.
Wow.
Even the most recent SSB, I was just reading recently, the most recent SSB, which will be issued in 1st of April, that had 900 million offered, but the total applied for was only about 300 million.
Wow, and that's one third.
Yeah, that's one third only, correct. We've had a very strong demand in the December 23 SSB. That one had 1 billion on offer, but then 1.8 billion was applied for. Mm-hmm. So that was a pretty strong one, but of course, that was also a pretty high interest rate. I think the highest in the past 6 months or so. Not that I'm saying the current one is bad, but it's just that the demand actually dropped. And if we look back to March, SSB, the one that's already been just issued earlier at the start of the month, 800 million was on offer, but only 123 million was applied for.
Wow.
So SSB, surprisingly, the interest, I would think, has kind of dipped to the extent where unless an exceptionally high interest rate is offered, if not, I don't think retail investors will really be biting. Where they are biting, however, mm-hmm. is on the 6-month T-bill. Yeah, that has still has a very strong interest. So, for example, like the most recent one, which just finished auction yesterday, there was about 6.3 billion offer, but there's 14.4 billion applied for. Of course, this is a mixture of both institutional and retail investors, but you can see that a very strong demand. In fact, just checking general data, the amount applied for T-bills, at least from 2023, start of 2023 to now, it has always been more than whatever was on offer.
Right. I mean, would you say that it's solely because of the interest rates that they're offering is higher, or is it the flexibility of it all?
Okay, I think it comes down to a couple of factors. First thing is definitely T-bills interest rates right now would be higher than SSBs.
Yeah.
And the second thing, I think, and that has a major part to play in it, would actually be the duration. There's only 6 months you need to wait. A bit, of course, these 6 months, you really will find very hard to get rid of your bond if you wanted to. So most people are probably aware that once they have sunk money to a T-bill, they don't see it at all, no matter what, until 6 months is over. But it is only 6 months. So maybe that's why investors' appetite for this is a little bit stronger. You know, 6 months isn't exactly very long. talking to you now, it's March, and then in 6 shows time, which is in September, you know, the TV that just restructuring yesterday, we have matured already. So 6 months isn't really very long. So I guess it does reflect that investors still prefer something rather short-term, okay, where they can at least know that they have access to their money again in a short while. Okay. I guess people don't really like to lock their money for long, but in that vein, I think Singapore Savings Bonds, I wouldn't actually see it as a lockup. In fact, just to stress that Singapore Savings Bonds, you can redeem them with a month's notice.
Yeah.
So you could, you know, still have a SSB, money in SSB that you can, in a way, take out almost anytime you want, just as long as you plan ahead. And the trade-off, of course, is that this kind of flexibility will come with slightly lower rates, plus the fact that SSB rates are pegged to 10-year SGS, right? So 10-year SGS, we know that the 10-year SGS, you is hovering at around 3 now, and that's really how you should be in the long run. It's just this period where T-bills and anything short-term is very heavily impacted by what the Fed's saying, and that's why 6 months and 1 year T-bills generally hovering higher than SSBs.
Right.
But, okay. That's how I see it.
It's fair that you mentioned, you know, for SSBs, as much as they have lower interest rates, they have a longer trajectory. And also, I think the flexibility lies where you just need to wait about 30 days or so to withdraw your funds at no capital loss, I believe, right?
Yes, no capital loss with the accrued interest, so you actually don't lose a thing. In fact, I find that SSBs, but this is just me and my thinking. Others may, of course, have a different situation.
Okay.
I find that SSBs are probably very well positioned in terms of flexibility and a reasonable rate of return.
Okay.
Keyword being reasonable, I always say that, you know, you can never really catch the market highs or going at the market lows. No one has that kind of crystal ball. So sometimes it's not about chasing the maximum return, but chasing a reasonable return. And to that end, I felt like SSBs has a pretty nice balance. I'm quite in favor of SSBs, but I'm not saying that T-bills are bad either.
Yep.
They could, of course, play a very important role. For example, I often like to quote this, right? And let's say you've planned for a major house renovation at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So now it's March, and you know you got your money set aside, and you know you don't want you can't of course invest this money you need at the end of the year, but you just try to squeeze a little return from that.
Okay.
And that's maybe where a TV will come in useful, right? Just put $50,000 of that random money in a TV, you will lose it. In fact, you make a little bit of it, right? Because of the payout, you know, that you get, and in 6 months' time, you know, you've got your money back and ready for a reno.
So
that's an example use case of a TV that I would personally do.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think longer term, so that's why SSBs probably fit the bill more for me.
Awesome. All right, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for the breakdown, Elijah. Now, we also have to talk about fixed deposit rates. Yeah. I mean, I've done my research. I've looked at, you know, the rates that major banks are offering here. And I think, or at least from what I've seen, they're offering an average about 3% interest yield over a period of 6 to 12 months.
Yes.
So what are you seeing in terms of the appetite for fixed deposits? Do people prefer fixed deposits over government securities? I mean, where do you see investors putting their money?
Okay, I got a feeling if you're comparing a fixed deposit to a T-bill, people would likely still move on to T-bills because most of the time, the T-bill will offer a better rate, at least in the current interest rate environment. FDs do have one advantage over T-bills, and that is you can break the FD and get back your principal most of the time without loss, just that, without the interest. So in a worst-case scenario, you could get back your FD, and the same can be said for T-bill. Like you, as I mentioned earlier, you will find it very hard-pressed to liquidate your T-bill and get back your principal. It's really a hold all the way to the end kind of instrument. But with an FD, you can. You can definitely, you probably want to read the fine print, of course, but most banks would allow you to just exit the FD just that you forfeit your interest.
Mm.
But having said that, the banks also probably know where the interest rate is heading, and that's why they are slightly offering lower interest rates for these FDs. I don't think it's very far off what a TB is offering. I'm seeing 3.3 as the highest in March. I don't that was at the start of March. Right now, I'm not too sure. But 3.3%, I would say 0.5% isn't very far off a TBU of 3.8, for example. So I guess it really boils down to the use case. What do you need your money for? How much liquidity you need to retain? And actually, while we're on that topic, money market funds have also been an option right? Although I cannot say that they are guaranteed because it's still an investment. But money market funds have been hovering at 3%+ as well, with liquidity on the order of a day or less. You could get your money back within a day.
Right.
So that's another option I felt that investors can consider.
Awesome.
Money market.
All right.
It's quite a good alternative.
Money market funds. Okay, interesting. Thanks for that, Elijah, and thanks for bringing up money market funds as well as an option. I mean, it's good to see that, you know, the magic number 3 is quite an attractive opportunity for investors to put their money into. But as with all things, good things must and will eventually come to an end. And during the recent FOMC meeting, Fed Chair Jerome Powell indicated that the central bank may soon start cutting rates, something that we'll discuss a little bit more later today. So I understand that this is also likely to affect the rates that we're blessed with today. So first off, can you share with us the relationship between Fed's interest rates to and how it affects T-bills, FDs, as well as SSBs?
Okay, well, the U.S. Treasury market is huge, right? So when Feds cut interest rates, and they will eventually, it's just a matter of which meeting they decide to cut it, there's definitely going to be a cascading impact generally across the globe, and in Singapore, we're not spared either. So when T-bills, when Fed rates, Fed cuts the rate, the T-bill rates will definitely come down. So will the 10-year. So just about everything else will be impacted. But of course, the biggest impact will be on 6-month T-bills and 1-year T-bills. So we are expecting, the last I checked, there is still there's a 70-something% chance, right?
Okay.
That there's these two online. There's a 70-something% chance that they won't cut in May. But by the one after May, I can't remember exactly what the date is. It's very likely that they will cut 25 basis points. So we are probably at the very tail end of the high interest rate now. It's
right.
More of the can only go down from here. It's just when and how fast.
Mm.
And I will see that at that point, T-bills will start to come down in yield. I don't think they'll move very rapidly. They will still remain attractive.
Okay.
But for investors who are investing their CPIOA money into T-bills, that T-bill will become probably a lot less attractive because OA is 2.5%, right? So, of course, you lose interest depending on how the T-bill works, whether it's at the start of month, end of the month, middle of the month. You could lose up to 8 months of CPIOA interest for investing your CPIOA money in a T-bill. So I remember seeing somewhere that someone did the math, and if you just happen to be unlucky and you will lose that 8 months maximum of interest, the cutoff for a 6 month T-bill is 3.3%.
Wow.
And so you really got to be getting more than 3.3% on a 6 month T-bill before you think about investing OA. I hope I didn't remember the number wrongly, but 3.3%, which means if we are at 3.8 now and then T-bills in general slip below 3.5.
Yeah.
People who are investing their OA monies in T-bills might want to reconsider, you know, their decision and maybe moving forward, leave it in just OA instead, right?
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of hassle, right? For a little bit of a gain.
Yeah, for a little bit more. So, but of course, sometimes that may be the only way for us to, you know, we like to squeeze our money every way possible.
Yeah.
Search for discount codes and things like that, shop doing for sales and things like that. But at some point, you have to ask yourself, given the amount of capital I'm going to put in, is the hassle worth my potential extra return, given the fact you never know the yield of a T-bill until after it's over.
Yeah.
So for those kind of OA, CPI OA money being invested, you probably want to make sure you put in cut off luck for yourself.
Okay.
For cash, liquid cash, I still think T-bills will always be an option because the alternative is living in the bank doing nothing and earning nothing, right?
Mm.
So T-bills should still be popular via cash, right?
But
So that's my take.
Would you say, you know, at a certain rate of return, these government bonds or fixed deposits would be irrelevant in today's context as well as from 2024 and beyond?
Okay, I wouldn't say irrelevant. That's a rather... it's rather strong, but I don't think it would be totally irrelevant.
Okay.
There will still be cases where people would want to just park some money in a T-bill, for example.
Right.
The example I said earlier, if you need money for something down the road. It's just that I guess it will have to depend on the options available as well at that time and what are the alternatives to a T-bill. Okay, like I mentioned, money market was an option, but I wouldn't say they'll totally be irrelevant. It's just that maybe you see demand taper down quite a fair bit.
Mm.
Especially, I noticed one thing, or maybe it's just me, but every time the 10-year yield for SSB creeps past 2.5%, demand does tend to go up quite a fair bit.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's one thing. I think 2.5% is quite a matching number. Maybe it's due to the fact that OA offers us 2.5%. So SSBs, once they dip below 2.5, I really do think demand will tend to drop quite a fair bit. But T-bills Will probably, I think they probably drop once they go below 3 and then maybe later at 2.
Right.
We've been so used to 3+% for the past almost two years.
2%.
Yeah. So investors kind of expect that, but I also caution one thing, which is, as you said, the good times, in a way, are coming to an end.
Yes.
So people must think, what's next? You know, and if you want to start transitioning, there's no better time than now.
Yes.
Because, yeah, the rates will get cut.
In fact, that brings us to our next topic, which is the concept of duration management. So tell us a little bit more about why it matters in Singapore's context.
Okay. So I will say one thing. I do think that in general, a lot of people I've spoken to, that they tend to want to look at very short-term gains, which is maybe why, going back to why TVs are so popular, it's just 6 months, right?
Mm.
And yet, SSBs, which I wouldn't say inferior, they just work differently over 10 years instead of 6 months.
Mm.
If you actually count the returns from a SSB, right, in the long run, you probably beat a TBU ladder.
Oh.
Yeah, because you're getting 3% for 10 years. A TBU, yeah, let's round it off to 4%. You get 4% now, you may get 4% again maybe 6 more months. But you think about over the course of 10 years, unless we have another event like what happened the past 2 years.
Oh, that's pretty normal.
Yeah, TBUs have always been actually holding at less than 1%. You check the past data.
Oh.
Before the rate hike, TBUs have been less than 1% for so long. So you average it all out. SSB probably gives you slightly better returns than a TBU, but that's, of course, assuming nothing unexpected happens. So we talk about duration in the sense that people tend to be attracted towards shorter duration instruments, and I'm not really surprised. I come in because the commitment is so short, right?
Yeah.
Just 6 months. And we often think about longer-term commitments as something we have to plan around carefully, which may cause a bit of hesitancy or reluctance to proceed. For example, if you are buying a house, that is like a 20-year mortgage a commitment. That's why people always think very carefully, right? You think about what kind of house can I afford the mortgage? Wow, it's 20 years. You know, that's what's probably going through the typical investor's mind. Mm. But that is unlikely to happen for, say, let's say you buy a fridge from electronic store, and you put it on a 3-month payment plan, like one of those buy now pay later plans, right? And then you're like, oh, it's just 3 months, I'll be able to afford it.
Mm.
It's short, you know. So psychologically, I think we're all wired for to favor something shorter duration, because you know we can see the end in sight, maybe.
Yeah.
But when it comes to duration management, so we need to ask ourselves one thing. Of course, if your money is something that meant to be used in the next 1-2 years, then you can't move into a longer-term instrument. It doesn't make sense. But if it is money that you've had sitting there and your goal was to generate long-term income, and you're doing that by T-bills now, when the T-bills come down, you have to look at income-generating instruments, for example, that are meant for the longer term. There's many instruments out there, and probably not something that we can talk about today, but you know, you have to start moving or reallocating, you know, restructuring the allocation of your holdings from these shorter-term instruments, which will eventually come down, to longer-term instruments, which over the long run should be able to generate the kind of returns that that you're seeing now, but for the long run. And if you ask me if I could lock in 3% for the long, really, really ultra-long run, I would do that with a heartbeat. It's just that SSBs only give you 3% for 10 years. So you can see that it's a lot of getting out of comfort zone and thinking about the future instead of thinking of the next 6 months. So, yeah, that's really duration management in a nutshell. So I would say start to plan the reallocation of your assets. It's very important, because when you realize that TVs have dropped to 2 or even 1%, and then you'll be like, oh, what's next, right?
Yeah.
I can assure you one thing, the market will have moved as well already.
Okay.
Instruments that are good now for the long run, they may have changed already. So the allocation, the transition needs to happen in the next 1 year or so as the rates get cut. You have to start moving.
Very good. Thanks a lot for that long-term investing outlook. I think that's something that we need to do. to try to embrace a little bit more.
Yes.
It's also like what I've read this article about how Warren Buffett said that the stock market is becoming more like a casino where people are just, you know, selling and hoping to make profit in the shortest time possible and ignoring the long-term investment approach. So
yes,
it's a very good topic and a very important concept to embrace as well. So thanks for that, Elijah. Now let's shift to the global interest rates, especially the US rate cut, which I've mentioned just now. Now, just recently in the FOMC meeting, they mentioned that, you know, they will be, or at least indicated that they will be cutting or sticking to the 3 rate cuts for this year.
Yeah.
We don't know when. We don't know at which time they will be doing it. But like what you've said, it's only a matter of time until they do it. So how do you see the rate cuts affecting, you know, the Singapore economy, the everyday man on the road? And how should we prepare ourselves for it, Elijah?
Okay. I do think the rate cuts would probably have an impact. I think the everyday man on the road, you have to take the typical Singaporean, your mortgage should experience some relief. But of course, those people who are on floating rates still, right, I think you might start to see some relief starting the second half of this year. Mortgage being, I think, the biggest gripe that a lot of my clients have talked to me about, because they just see their payments go up and up. I think relief is in sight, and that will be one thing. But of course, it will be a little harder to get more of your money if rates go down. I know there are a lot of people who have been squeezing money out of, what you call that, those kind of high yield savings accounts.
Yeah.
I guarantee those rates will drop. It's just when. I personally use the OCBC 360, and I've been getting pretty good interest rate just by crediting my salary there, saving, increasing my balance, all of that. But I am definitely not under any illusion. I know for sure that those good times will come to an end, because prior to the rate hikes, OCBC 360 was, well, just okay at best, I guess.
Yeah.
Not even giving, you know, I'm getting like 4% now, you know.
Wow.
Just by crediting my salary and then increasing my bank balance. 4%.
Oh my goodness.
That's very good. That's like, it's like CPF SA level of returns. But not too long ago, 3 years ago, I think doing the same actions would have net me about 1.8%.
Wow,
right, so you see the rates, how fast they've gone up, but at the same time they will go down. So that is two impact, right? I mean, mortgage, if is the typical Singaporeans worry, don't worry, there's relief inside. But then you're not going to be able to find more ways to, or you have lesser ability to squeeze your money, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's a two sided thing, right? I think that's two sides of the coin that I look at.
Okay.
But overall, you're investing, generally speaking, you're invested in bonds, then you should see your bond prices rally a little bit, and that could bring some, that you might want to cream off some profit off the top, right? We don't know how long the rate cuts will go up for, but you know, you have some profit, you can take it. On equity side of things, if you're invested in equity, I must caution one thing, just because the the interest rates get cut, right, it doesn't mean markets will rally.
Mm.
Because markets rallying, equity side is a very different ballgame from bond side. Bond is a mathematical equation. Cut interest rate, bond prices will go up, and vice versa. But equity markets are affected by more than just interest rate cuts. General market sentiment and things like that will also, the economy, how it's performing, GDP data, unemployment, and of course, black swan events, like, for example, I don't know, like COVID. I'm not saying that COVID should occur, but COVID will occur again. We saw what happened to the market, right?
Yeah.
So, just remember the equity markets are affected by a lot more than interest rates. So we can't say it with 100% certainty that the markets will rally.
Right.
There's a good chance, of course, right, once money flows out of bonds into equity markets with rate cuts, but there's a lot more at play. But for people positioned in bonds, I think you can expect a rally in the prices. So I think that's a good thing.
Okay.
Okay,
now, before I let you go, though, we have to get this from you. If there's one thing you've learned about managing your finances over the past few years of economic instability, what would it be? Think of it in the context of perhaps a post-high inflationary environment as well as an inflation environment.
Okay, regardless of whether it's high inflation, low inflation, or what, I've always come to embrace the concept of generating side income streams.
Okay.
This is something that has helped held up well for me personally. I can't say for everyone, of course, but it's held up well for me because when you have multiple streams of income, I think you'll be a little bit more resilient to anything that can be thrown away. So the typical Singaporean, you may face worries about things like retrenchment and all that.
Yeah.
And you realize that why is that fear there, for example, in the case of retrenchment, is because if you lose your job, there goes your income.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you have built income streams from around, this is not a whole topic entirely, but if you have income streams coming from everywhere, okay, even losing your job, right, may not set you back as much. Right. So let's just give some numbers to this, right? So for example, you take home 5,000 a month and then you've been investing or you've been building income streams, maybe say a hobby. Some people I know, they do YouTube as a side income. So all these are possible options, right? So let's say you build it up to 1,000 a month, right? And then suddenly you lose your job. Gone, that $5,000 is gone, but you still got your side income coming at 1,000 a month.
Yeah.
If you trim your lifestyle, you could probably still somewhat get by 1,000 a month, which buys you breathing space, buys you time. You don't panic just because, you know, you are under massive pressure just to get another job to keep the family going. You still got that bare bones 1,000 a month that will tie you over while you work things out.
Okay.
You are less stressed, less panic. So resiliency is probably the name of the game. You just want to make sure that it's not just your day job you're depending on, because we all know that jobs aren't forever.
I like that one. Fantastic. Yeah. It's a great end to this topic and this conversation. Resiliency and extra stream of income just to protect yourself during times of need. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Elijah.
Welcome. Thank you.
All right. Continue to keep it right here with us on Money FM 89.3.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio, at the App Store and Google Play.